I hate it when the tea bag breaks. Not tea bagging, that's something different. Today we're drinking, I am drinking pomegranate green tea. The tea bag broke, so now I have little tea leaf floaties in the hot tea. Not hottie, like cute girls, but hot tea. Hot tea, tea bagging. There's so many opportunities for misinterpretation when you're talking about tea. Who would have thunk that could be such a controversial topic, right? Oh, floaties. You can scream and shout with all your might. Hey, you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, motherfucking moan, look for a safe space. You can shove your opinion up your ass, that way Obama's cock has something to keep it company. Either you are wrong or I am right. Don't forget the ever-present, the most likely, the third possibility. You are wrong and I am right. I was going to say something different and then my brain seized up. That tends to happen. I am the great one himself. I am the founder of the Cynical Libertarian Society. I'm drinking hot tea and trying to talk at the same time, and this is Stating the Obvious podcast, a weapons platform from which I launch the cruise missile of my intellect that homes in on and destroys motherfucking statists all around the world. All around the world. I could be jumping up and down and everything right now and shouting. And that would be fun, but I'm just in a more mellow mood right this moment. We'll see how long it lasts. It's the hot tea. This shit's really good. Alright, greetings. I'm the Great One, founder of Cynical Libertarian Society, podcasting 11 years, yada yada yada. In the control room, the lovely and adorable Randy. You can send us email at god, dog spelled backwards, god, G-O-D, at cynlibsoc.com on the interwebs. And of course the website is cynlibsoc.com, where you can go and get the latest episodes. If you're I need to release something on YouTube. If you're listening on the YouTube, know that the YouTube is always behind what's going on over at the website, behind the actual real life podcast. Because eventually I know that my YouTube channel will get banned and removed, and so there's not a lot of reason for me to be able to talk. There's not a lot of reason to put effort. That reminds me, I just saw today a post over at A Voice for Men. Apparently, their Facebook page was removed because it violated community standards. This is why I refer to Facebook as feminist book. This is why I put even less effort. The Cynical Libertarian Society does have a presence over on Facebook. I put zero effort into Facebook. Zero. Because it's only a matter of time before the femistatists have me removed from feminist book. Social media. No, you don't know. That's why I'm going to tell you. I just love it here. I don't know. That's why you're supposed to be telling me. If I already knew, you wouldn't need to communicate this information to me. So the fact that you're communicating information to me, hopefully it's something I don't already know, and I'm learning something new. So no, I don't know. I wonder sometimes if we are, as a society, as a nation, as a people, are going to have a divide between people who spend people who spend excessive amounts of time on social media versus people who don't. Because as I disconnect myself more and more from social media, some odd years ago, I was never a really heavy user, because I've never had the smartphone, so I've never had that ability to you know, thumb type and fucking text and Facebook from every single place where I am at every moment of my life. But for a while, for a few years, I was into the whole social media thing. I thought, oh, this is really amazing and it's important and I need to be on social media and this is going to be a key to success and all this other shit. And for some people, it is. I acknowledge that. For some people, social media is a key to success. But I think many people, and myself at the time, I would include me in this category some odd years ago, looked at social media as something of a silver bullet. Right? If I just promote the podcast on Facebook, I'll get more listeners. Which I never really did that, but that's just an example. And of course, the biggest boost in the actual stats that I can see, my Google Analytics and all this other shit, you know, the biggest boost that viewership use of the website has ever gotten was being mentioned by Aaron Clary over on his blog. Social media, and again, if, you know, I don't do a lot of social media. I send some shit on Twitter a few times a day, the archives and stuff, and I tweet the episodes and the new episodes go on Twitter and the new episodes go on the Facebook, and then I do the YouTube, which is, but I don't put a lot of effort into the social media. And as far as I can tell, social media does nothing for me. Now, some people say, well, if you put more effort into it, maybe so, but here's the point. At what point? Man, that's good. At what point does there begin to manifest a difference? Hang on a second. Oh yeah, I had to open the blinds. It's really sunshiny and nice outside. At what point does there begin to manifest some sort of discernible division between people who primarily interact via social media and people who primarily interact, by interact I mean interact with other people, in the real world? There's some nice things about social media, talking to people on the internet, all this other shit, but most of the time it doesn't really manifest into any kind of real world friendships, right? Going down to the brewery with a person and having a beer and talking about stuff. And I just wonder, at what point do the people whose social life and whose friendships revolve around people on the internet versus people whose social lives and friendships and connections and business connections revolve around interacting with people in the real world? I wonder if there's going to manifest some sort of division between those two groups of people. I don't really know. I'm just pulling this out of my ass. It's something I think about now and then and I wonder about. I don't have any really solid theories. This is just me tossing out thought candy. Do as you wish with it. All right, let's move on. As you may or may not know, I just finished up 6 podcasts talking about the book Datanomics. And, of course, I have a few more thoughts about this book and the information presented in it. Here's the first thought. Hold on 1 second. All right, I had to make a note. Here's my first thought. After reading it, here's something that occurred to me. Of course, Datanomics was written aimed at women. It is, as I've said, basically a book about all the ways men are broken and what men need to do in order to become good enough for all of these women who can't find boyfriends. And its target audience, however, is women, to explain to them why they can't find a boyfriend or a husband. And it occurs to me, of course, that the gender imbalance in the world of dating, marriage, works both ways. John points out in the book that, for example, women in New York City, it's hard for them to find a boyfriend because there are so many more women than men. Now, of course, in places in the United States where the men outnumber the women, exactly the same thing holds true for men. It'll be difficult for men to find girlfriends. If there's 3 men for every 2 women, that means a third of the men are pretty much screwed at any given moment. We're assuming here that, you know, they're heterosexual and they want to find a girlfriend or wife or whatever, right? It's, again, if you're homosexual or if you're asexual or whatever, then this doesn't apply to you. What occurred to me is that this book could have just as well been targeted at men, but it wasn't. It's targeted very specifically at women. And then it occurred to me why that is. It is, of course, because, as I've said a few thousand times before, men understand supply and demand. Women don't. Men don't really need to have an entire book explaining to them that if there are more men than women, it will be hard to find a girlfriend. We can rather instinctively figure this out. Right? This is why I don't usually go to parties, because typically, around here anyway, the parties are a bunch of sausage jockeys and a couple of chicks. And it's like, all right, I'm in a room and there's 20 guys and 3 girls. And 2 of them are married. Not that I care. The girls, that is, not the guys. You don't need to explain to men that fewer women than men means it's going to be hard to find a date and you might have to work a little bit harder. Women, on the other hand, have no instinctive understanding of this. And in fact, in the book, John gives examples where he says to women that, well, the gender ratios have something to do with it. And women actually say more or less to him, no, I don't think that's true. And thus, this book is targeted at women. It's also, of course, targeted at women because women are the sort of people who will buy a book like this. It's not just a matter of they don't understand supply and demand, but they're more likely to buy these sorts of books, which, I mean, Datanomics is not a self-help book, but if you twist it a little bit, you could put it into that category. Now, another thing about these women, and if you listen to any of the podcasts about Datanomics, you'll know that, according to John, all of these women who are single, they're all successful, and they're beautiful, and they're educated, and I pointed out there's a lot of things he doesn't tell us, right? Do they work for the government? Do they work for nonprofits? Do they have a liberal arts degree? Are they fat? Are they divorced? Do they have children? All of these, do they have short hair? Do they have tattoos? Do they have metal stuck in their face? All of these things that I'm sure John does not think are relevant, but actually are relevant. Did I mention I was going to tangent, and then I said I'm not going to tangent, and then my brain didn't know where I was going without going down the tangent, so we're going to tangent for a minute. I'm going to go tangenting. I mentioned I'm reading the book by, what's their names, Barbara and Alan Pease? Pierce, Barbara, and something, the one about why do girls need shoes and guys don't read maps. I can't remember the title. It's one of those long titles. Why women can never have too many shoes and why men can't ask for directions or something. But it's a really good book. And in there, they do this quiz. I may or may not have mentioned this on the podcast. Trigger warning. If you're a feminist, you're about to be triggered. They do this quiz in here to help women find out, you know, are you attractive to men? And they ask questions, and they grade, like, the questions, and I'm not making this up, the questions are like, how long is your hair? Is your hair short? Is it above your shoulders? Is it at your shoulders? Is it past your shoulders, right? Past your shoulders gets the most points. Above your shoulders gets the fewest. It's like, what kind of shoes do you own? Do you own tennis shoes? Do you own flats? Do you own high heels? High heels gets the highest score, right? Now, when you go out, how do you dress? You know, sweatpants, slacks, or a dress? A dress gets the highest points, right? And it's, I know it's an old book, which was written back in the patriarchy days before political correctness, but it's still true. And there is, I feel very certain. Oh God, I just said I feel very certain. Oh, remember, whenever somebody says they feel something, that means they have no empirical evidence. I just stepped into that one, didn't I? I have no empirical evidence for this because, as I've said throughout the previous six podcasts, John did not provide this information about these women and he didn't give us pictures. I suspect that these women are simply not very feminine. And as much as this may trigger you and be patriarchy and be oppression and all this other stuff, being feminine counts. I met this chick the other day, and at first glance I saw her, and it's like from a distance, and I said, she might be pretty hot. I got up closer and I was like, she's actually not that hot. And then we started talking, and she still is, unless she's dead or something, or had a lobotomy. She is very feminine in her mannerisms and her speech and her personality. And even though initially I did not consider her to be particularly physically attractive, my opinion changed based on the fact that she was, is, still is, unless she's dead or something, very feminine. Femininity matters. The inverse, converse, opposite. I need to clarify the definitions of the words inverse and converse. I'm supposed to know those because that's logic stuff and I don't. The opposite is also true. When you see a woman who is physically attractive, but then you get up there and you find out she's very masculine, or we could also say not very feminine. I suppose you could be not very feminine without being particularly masculine. I mean, it's possible. I'm open to this. How many of these beautiful, successful, educated women who can't find boyfriends are simply not very feminine? How many of them spend their time acting like men? Of these women, how many of them have short hair? How many of them define themselves by their career and their education? And of course, the tattoos and the piercings, and how often do they wear a dress and some high-heeled shoes and put on a reasonable amount of makeup? I know reasonable is a nebulous word that can be defined in all sorts of different ways. There is... in movies and television, a big push lately, it seems. Yeah, no empirical data on this, just my personal observations. To turn women into men. To replace men with women. And have the women doing the masculine things, right? I mean, the Ghostbusters remake with all chicks is one example. And this is certainly femistatism, which is driving this. I have no doubt of that. It's the whole women can do anything a man can do. Excuse me. You know, men and women are equal, yada, yada, yada. Just the whole men are disposable, blah, blah, blah. if you look at especially science fiction, there is a very obvious push in science fiction to put women into male roles. And because, as I've talked about before, women are unable to distinguish fantasy from reality. Right, again, to briefly illustrate that point, I will now choke to death and die. All right, to briefly illustrate that point, I'm a boy, and when I watch Rambo movies, you know, I enjoy it. He's running around, he's shooting stuff, all other stuff. But I know in reality that killing other people is not always the best solution to your problems, unless it's in self-defense, it might be. And I also know that in reality, an M60 machine gun is going to go through that 2-foot belt of ammunition you have in about 3 seconds, because I've actually fired M60 machine guns. So I know that they're running around, they're doing all this shooting, and they're, in reality, they would be out of ammo. I know that this is fantasy. I don't believe that if I had an M60 machine gun and 2 feet worth of ammo belt, that I could fire the M60 one-handed and mow down 70 Viet Cong while all the Viet Cong are shooting at me and all of them would miss. I understand that's fantasy. It's not real. Women, on the other hand, see movies and they think, oh, look, in the movie, this chick who's, you know, never had a lightsaber in her life can grab a lightsaber and instantly be a great fighter and beat the bad guy who spent years and years and years practicing using a lightsaber, and therefore I can do that too. Right, women see movies where some chick goes to college and she gets a liberal arts degree and she graduates and she gets hired by the President of the United States to be her, because it's a woman president, of course, her personal assistant or what, right? And women don't really distinguish that these things don't happen. And so I wonder how much of movies and television series and TV presenting women as men, again, with the tattoos and the short hair and beating people up and all this other stuff. I wonder how much of this is leaking over into the minds of real women, not characters on the screen, and thus influencing them to think, well, if I just behave more like a man, if I cut my hair off and I use more bad language and I get some tattoos, maybe men will find me attractive. Because again, women don't understand that women are attracted to masculine men, but they don't understand that men are attracted to feminine women. Women make the assumption that whatever they are attracted to must obviously, well, I should say, no, not women, not all women. Some women make the assumption that because they are attracted to masculinity, men must also be attracted to masculinity, because they just don't get that. That's not something that really turns us on. And when we look at, especially, I said science fiction, the femistatist are really coming for science fiction. Look at, so we had Star Wars The Force Awakens, where we've got the chick whose name I don't remember because I don't care. Right? I mean, this has all been beat into the ground by other people already. You know, she knows how to repair the Millennium Falcon better than Han Solo does, even though it's his spaceship. She can fight with a lightsaber, even though she's never trained with a lightsaber in her life, as opposed to Luke Skywalker. It took him 3 movies, right? He had to go through this path, this hero's journey that we all know from all the way back in the days of Gilgamesh, right? Where Luke Skywalker, the hero, he starts out, he sucks, he's naive, he doesn't know the ways of the world, he has no idea how to use a lightsaber, and he has to train, and he has to suffer, and he has to learn, and he has to fail. And you know, and this is the message that men get, which is a good message to get. Whereas women, of course, get the message that, oh, you just pick up the lightsaber and you can do anything with it because you have a vagina and you go, girl. And again, how much of this permeates into the little brains? And so they think, well, all I need to get a man, I just need to be alive. Men should just throw themselves at me. And if they're not, well, there must be something wrong with them. And I'm on the YouTube and I saw a trailer for something called Star Wars Rogue One. I'm like, all right, what the hell is this? So I click on the trailer to watch it. And apparently, I have no idea, I'm just basing all this off the trailer. Apparently there's another Star Wars movie coming? I don't know if it's a movie, TV, I don't fucking know. It's called Rogue One. It looks like it's about the agent who goes into the original Death Star, or, you know, to get the plans so that they know where to shoot the missiles to blow the Death Star up. And of course, she's a woman. Again, we have a woman playing the man's role. She has, if I remember correctly, could be wrong. If I remember correctly, she has short hair. She blows things up. She shoots people. She runs and she jumps and she's tough. And she shoots stormtroopers. It's a male role being played by a woman. Appleseed. Appleseed is a Japanese manga written by a guy whose name I can't pronounce because he's Japanese. Mohamed Shiro or something like that. Anyhow, there's the manga. That's the comic book, which I have. I'm actually rereading it right now. And reading it inspired me to look for the anime versions. Anime, if you don't know what anime is because you're not a loser, anime is the Japanese cartoon. So the manga is the comic book. And when you take the comic book and you make it into a movie, TV series, whatever, that's called anime. Rereading the manga inspired me to look for anime. And through the library, I found 4 DVDs. I ordered them. One of them, I haven't watched it yet, appears to be a live action, not an animated, so it'll be interesting to see how they pull that off. And one of the animes is the old, old Appleseed, which I remember from back in the day. And the other two are more modern. And the animation is okay. There's the one I'm watching right now probably has the better animation. In the manga, I can never pronounce her name. Briarios is the cyborg guy, and I'm gonna call her Danielle because I can't pronounce her name correctly half the time. For somebody who has a podcast, I have a lot of problems talking. Danielle and Briarios. Danielle is a normal female human. Briarios is a cyborg, a really big, giant guy. And they are partners, they're survivors. So anyway, I can't sum up the manga. Because the manga is large and it's extensive and there's a lot of nuances and all sorts of stuff. But in the thing, the two of them, it takes place on the planet Earth after things have been devastated by war. There are no nuclear weapons, but a lot of other stuff. So civilization has collapsed and the two of them are surviving out in the destroyed cities and everything like this. And meanwhile, over here someplace else, the city is built, it's called Olympus, and it's run by a giant computer because you always have to have a giant computer running everything because, you know, that's the Star Trek thing. Hey, let's have everything on the spaceship. That was the power supply beeping because we just had a power glitch. Fantastic. The Star Trek phenomena, the Star Trek thing, right? We'll have everything on the Enterprise run by one computer. Yes, that's a fucking brilliant idea. Because that way, if the one computer fails, you lose everything. Under no circumstances should different systems of the Enterprise be run by different isolated computers so that if one of them gets infected by a virus, you know, like the Borg take it over, or it the hard drive crashes. I know, it's the future. There's no hard drive. Yeah, right. In the future, technology is totally fucking perfect and never malfunctions. So anyway, of course, there's one computer that runs everything, and the computer's called Gaia. And in Olympus, they have Bioroids, which are essentially clones that have some cybernetic parts in them. And the Bioroids are there to help stabilize society, and they do it. Anyway, so it's very extensive and nuanced. And of course, you can't put all of that into an anime, into a movie. I acknowledge that. But what you can put in the anime is the fact that Danielle, is that what I was calling her? Danielle? Dana. I'll call her Dana. That's easier to remember. Is that Dana and Briarios are partners. They're equals. They each have flaws. They each have strengths. They have rational debates with each other. They get angry at each other. They're very good friends. Potentially, you know, in love with each other. But everything is very... it's realistic. It's subtle when it should be subtle. It's funny when it should be funny. It's a well-written manga. Looking at, and there's no, or very little, let me rephrase that, of Dana doing this superhuman stuff. Briarios does superhuman stuff because he's a fucking cyborg, right? He has giant metal muscles, so forth and so on. He can rip the door off of a car. Now, in the animes, in the two recent animes, all of this is somewhat perverted to make Briarios into more of a asshole, the kind of man that women are attracted to, while Dana is converted into more of a lovesick puppy over Briarios, while at the same time being what Aaron Cleary always calls the roundhouse kicking cop chick. So, I mean, for example, at one point, Dana is laying on a hospital bed, okay? And people are standing around her, and she's laying on her back on the hospital bed, and she comes flying off of the bed, flips over in the air, lands on her feet and punches somebody. Now look, I understand. It's just a movie. First of all, remember, it's not just a movie. If I made a movie about heterosexual white men who work for a living from the South taking guns and killing black people and women, nobody would say, well, it's okay, it's just a movie. Okay, so it's not just a movie. It's not just a movie. We need to fucking move on beyond this. It's just a movie shit. Trigger warning, it's not just a movie. It's science fiction. It is a movie. It's an animated movie. There's some room for some leeway. But none of the other human characters are capable of doing this sort of stuff. By the way, try this for yourself. If you have ever seen the police arresting people and they make the people get down on their stomachs, lay down on the ground, that is the wrong answer. And this is why Dana jumping out of the bed and flipping over and landing on her feet is even more unrealistic. Not that it's not unrealistic enough, but she's laying on her back. Try this for yourself. Get your friend with a stopwatch. Lay down on your stomach. Put your hands by your side. Have your friend say, go! And time how fast you can get to your feet. Now, lay down on your back. Have your friend say, go! And have him, her, time how fast you can get to your feet. You can get to your feet from laying prone on your stomach much faster than you can from laying prone on your back, and it seems a little counterintuitive, but it's true. Trust me on this. This is why if you're ever arresting somebody or detaining somebody or need to control somebody, whatever, make them lay on their back, not on their stomach. So anyhow, Dana is capable in the anime of these completely impossible physical feats. Like, it's like this Matrix shit where they're running on the walls and stuff. And yes, they're in the Matrix, but we're not in the Matrix in Appleseed. This is supposed to be real stuff. She's a normal human. No other normal human can do the things she's doing. Additionally, in the manga, there are multiple female supporting characters. And in the manga, the female supporting characters are generally feminine. And of course, the prime minister, all of the high-ranking politicians are all women, of course. Partially because it's Japanese manga and it's sort of, you know, cute chicks is what Japanese manga is about. So there is that. But in the anime, the women like Nikkei, in the manga, Nikkei is this cute blonde chick with long hair who is the assistant to the prime minister, Athena, who's the redhead. Oh, he's got to be a redhead. And in the anime, Nikkei, whatever the fuck you say it, has, of course, short hair. And she's more of a bitch. That is to say, she's more masculine in her behavior. Athena is, of course, older, less attractive, more masculine, shorter hair. Right? In the anime, the representative of Poseidon, which is a giant corporation that used to be Japan, is, of course, a woman with short hair and a killer body. But all the politicians from other countries who come to Olympus to negotiate on giving Olympus control of all the satellites orbiting the planet Earth. Because, see, if we just have total information, it's hilarious. It's total information awareness. The goal, the political goal in this thing, Athena, the prime minister of Olympus, wants control of all the satellites orbiting the Earth to stop terrorism. Because once she controls all the satellites, she will be able to have total information awareness of what's happening on the planet, and then they'll be able to stop terrorism. Does this sound familiar to anybody? It's just a movie. It's just a movie. You statists are so fucking stupid. So in the anime, the female characters have positions of power, but most of them are feminine. I mean, of all the female characters with power positions, Athena is maybe the least feminine. But that makes a little bit of sense in real life, because if you're the prime minister of a giant city and you're trying to control it, you know, you don't have time to be like, oh, I'm going to put on some fucking lipstick today. Sometimes you just have to get out of bed and go kick somebody in the ass. Okay, it's understandable. In the anime, so all the politicians, all the representatives from the other countries, which do still exist, even though it's a war-torn Earth, that come to Olympus to negotiate giving Athena control of all their satellites. No, they're all men. They're all terrified of each other. They're all scared. And when the terrorists attack the meeting hall while they're having the debates, all the men, they're all so frightened and they all want to run away and hide. And Athena has to stand up and tell them, we're not going anywhere. You know, it's just like, Jesus, fuck. You know, again, the men are all buffoons, except for Briareos. He's an asshole. He's the typical alpha male, aloof asshole who just doesn't love Dana as much as Dana loves him because he's a jerk. But Dana's still the lovesick puppy. However, at the same time, she not only can she beat up other humans who have guns without weapons, she just with her body, she's a human. She beats up robots. She beats up landmates, which are like, what's a landmate? If you saw Aliens, remember at the and when they had the giant, the forklift, but Sigourney Weaver, Ripley, you know, you get in the forklift and it just drives, it's kind of like a giant bodysuit. That's essentially what a landmate is. A landmate is a robot that you get inside of. And yeah, I mean, she's a normal human, but she can beat up landmates with her fist. She can jump from one building to another. Yeah, just completely, and this is, again, just to bring this back home, men look at this stuff and we recognize it's not real. Women don't have the connections in their brains that allow them to watch this and recognize that's not real. And they think, wow, she's awesome and she's tough. If I were just more masculine like she is, maybe I could find a boyfriend. So they cut their hair off and they start using more bad language. And they get some tattoos. And they can't figure out why they're single. And then somebody like John comes along and writes a book called Datanomics, where he tells them, it's not your fault, it's only because of the numbers. Which, as I've said, the numbers are important. Absolutely. The numbers are important. I do not want to downplay the importance of ratio between men and women, supply and demand. Again, we are men. We instinctively understand this. The difference is that I, as a man, recognize that if I want a girlfriend, I have to be an interesting person. I have to have the balance between being nice and being an asshole. I have to go to the gym. I have to watch what I eat. I have to have some conversational skills. I have to not dress like a fucking hobo. I have to talk to girls. Women, on the other hand, think that if they can't find a boyfriend, they should just be more like the girls on TV. And that's not working very well. Somewhere on the interwebs, I was watching a video which was talking about much the same thing I'm talking about right now with feminist influence in science fiction. And the person mentioned Han Solo being killed in the new Star Wars movie. And I don't know if he outright said it, but he floated the idea that that might have something to do with feminism. I just want to counter that a little bit. I think that's probably not what happened, because I just recently read the book How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, and in there it presented the information that Harrison Ford wanted the Han Solo character to die in the first movie and the second movie, and because he didn't really want to come back. I suspect Han Solo died not because of feminism. I think that was probably more because Harrison Ford wanted that to happen. I don't know, in a background knowledge. I just want to throw that out because, again, intellectual honesty. I could sit here and rant about how the feminist killed Han Solo. I'm just saying, I think that's probably not true. I think Harrison Ford killed Han Solo. Let's see. I'm looking at my notes here. I actually have notes. I did that. There's another video, which I'm pretty sure was in linkage over on the website right on Tuesday, right before this podcast comes out. And I don't know the guy's name. I think his YouTube channel is Computing Forever. I've only recently started watching him. I can't remember. He's British or from Ireland or something like that. He's United Kingdom. And he did a video talking about Doctor Who, which I have. Again, quickly, for those of you new to the show, I'm a big fan of the original Doctor Who series. I've attempted watching the new Doctor Who series, and it's a giant piece of shit, and I can't go near it, partially because of feminist influences. And as I often tell my friends, it's Twilight with a phone booth. Doctor Who has become aimed at 16-year-old girls, which is hilarious because I find Doctor Who less mature now than when it was aimed at children. I mean, Doctor Who, if you don't know this, Doctor Who originated as a children's show. That was how it was originally written, produced, you know, everything else. It was a children's show. This guy did this video. And apparently, I say apparently because I have not verified this from another source yet, apparently the BBC actually has gender quotas. Not just for the people behind the scenes. Apparently, according to him, I have not verified this yet, I'll do a little research on it, find out. because I could have misunderstood. He could be wrong. Anything is possible. Well, not anything, but many things are possible. Apparently, there are gender quotas for the actors in the show. And he's pointing out, he's like, first of all, apparently a Time Lord, which is this, just fucking, this is why I can't watch the new Doctor Who. So when I suffered the entire first season. It's like, yeah, the Time Lords were all destroyed. They're all dead. I'm the only Time Lord left. Okay, the Time Lords can travel through time. How the fuck do you destroy them? And if the Time Lords are complete, you would have to completely erase them from all of time in order to destroy them. Right? If you showed up today and killed all the Time Lords, it doesn't matter because the Time Lords yesterday have time travel. They can go to tomorrow. Right? You can't destroy all the Time Lords unless you somehow remove all the Time Lords from ever existing. In which case, how the fuck can the Doctor and the TARDIS possibly exist? So anyhow, all the Time Lords are dead. But then their Time Lords are just cropping up all over the fucking series. So the British guy, Computing Forever, if that's his correct username on YouTube, I'll just call him the British guy, even though we'll call him the UK guy, because I don't think he's technically from England. Ah, God. Just the nuances of communicating drives me crazy. The UK guy says that in one of the recent episodes, there's a white male Time Lord who is a general, okay, who regenerates into a black woman. And her first words upon regenerating into a black woman are something along the lines of, how can anybody stand being a man? That was way too much ego. Jesus fucking Christ. Right? Just the dripping of the obsession with transgenderism. The obsession with, oh, men have ego problems and men are assholes and all this other stuff. This is why homie don't watch no fucking Doctor Who anymore. I don't need this shit. And I'll try to remember to put that video in the show notes for this episode also. Yes. We're closing in on the end. I'm going to finish my notes, but I'm not going to get to anything else, sadly enough, probably. Back to women can't find dates. Okay. So you're acting like men. You don't understand supply and demand. You can't do math. Another factor that doesn't seem to be accounted for, and I know I've talked about this, but I just want to repeat it one more fucking time and try to be a little concise about it. I'm going to be concise. That's fucking hilarious. Semi-concise. We'll go with that. John talks about how all these beautiful, successful, educated women who can't find men are all successful. Successful at what? Well, successful at careers, right? They're not successful at being feminine. They're successful at their careers. And, of course, we have quotas. We've got the guy in Canada who made half of his cabinet or whatever women simply because they have vaginas, because he decided to implement a quota. We have, apparently, the BBC having a quota on actors. We have corporations implementing quotas to get more women in so as to enhance their reputations with the public, with the feminists, all this other crap. As more and more women get their jobs and become successful at these jobs, which, you know, whatever, it's a non-profit, it's a government gig, it's an affirmative action handout job, sure, whatever. But as these women get these jobs and become more successful, they take jobs that could belong to men. Now, I'm not saying that, well, first of all, that's true to an extent. It's not like there's some set number of jobs. You can create more jobs, but a company, a corporation, whatever, if somebody who has to operate in the free market has a limited amount of money and can therefore pay a limited number of people. Now, of course, with things like government jobs, the money you just print money. But as women become more and more successful in their careers and acquire more and more higher, more prestigious, we'll call it that, positions in corporations, in companies, even in government, in nonprofits, and all this other shit. Again, because women only want to date up, right? Women only want to date up, especially successful, educated, stunningly beautiful women. They only want to date up. As women become more successful in their careers, just as they become more educated, just as they become more wealthy, right? If you're a woman and you're only going to date a man who has a better job than you, has more education than you, has more money than you, and of course is taller than you, again, you are limiting your options. You throw into that the gender ratios, supply and demand. You throw into that that, again, John, who wrote this book, Datanomics, he's, I don't know how old he is, 40? He's, according to what I read about him, he's married. I mean, what kind of judge is he of what makes women attractive? He's married. His wife has his nutsack. You know, so you've got your short hair. You've got your tattoos, you've got your piercings, you've got your divorce, you've got your children, you've got your debt because you spent a bunch of money and you've got yada, 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 yada. All of this combines. Oh, there's a kitty cat outside the window. All right, boom, man, I just got distracted. Cats and girls, the two most distracting things for me. So you've got all these factors working against you. And yes, the gender ratios are important. But equally important is all these women running around acting like men. And the more you act like a man, I'm successful at my career. Again, sorry girls, we don't care. We men do not give a shit about your career. We don't. We care about feminine women. And that ain't you. And that is a big factor, not the only factor, but it's a big factor. Why you can't find this boyfriend or husband that you think you deserve because you're a woman.